Does applied Christianity make any difference? Does it make any difference in society? Well, interestingly, there's a new project within Harvard University. It's called Human Flourishing Project, and one of those who contributes to it is Dr. Byron Johnson, who's a professor at Baylor University. And Dr. Johnson is a well-known authority on the subject of the impact of Christianity on society. I'm Jerry Newcomb. This is Vocal Point. And Dr. Johnson, it's great to have you back on the program. Thank you for joining us.
It's always good to be with you, Jerry.
Do you know, I think if I were to read your biography, it would take the whole, time of the program. In fact, I printed it up, and I was very impressed with all you're doing. But you're not only a distinguished professor of social sciences at Baylor, you're also involved at some teaching at Harvard as well.
Well, Tyler Vanderwill, who is a professor at Harvard, became a good friend of mine about 4 years ago. And about 3 years ago, he and I began to discuss the possibilities of doing something truly extraordinary. And that finally came to fruition about 5 months ago when we launched something called the Global Flourishing Study, which is a joint project between Baylor and Harvard. So we have a team of about 36 scholars who will be studying the role of faith and human flourishing across the world. And so it's a spectacular project involving about 240,000 people in 22 countries around the world. And so it's an enormous undertaking, and it's really quite unprecedented and something we're really excited about, Jerry.
Huh, interesting. Well, we'll focus in our conversations, if we would, on America and especially church going, so within a Christian framework. Pew Research Center said that at the end of 2021, the percentage of adults who say religion is important to them dropped from 56% in 2007 to 41% in 2021. That's a major drop in just 14 years. Is that reflective of what's happening? People are just abandoning God and the church in droves?
I would argue it's not what's happening, and I would argue that it's increasingly difficult to get answers quite like that because of the challenges that survey research presents. And so the response rates, for example, on research like the ones that you're referring to tend to be incredibly low. What you really, really are looking for is a representative sample of the population. And, you know, Pew's a great organization. They try to do as well as they can, but increasingly that becomes a challenge for us to get an exact representative sample of the American population. And so sometimes you rely on, cell phone numbers, obviously, but you also rely on people that may be younger or skew towards younger than older. And so these questions are difficult to answer, especially when you ask them in this way, you know, is religion important to you? Or how often do you attend religious services? And then you give people a certain number of options to respond, but how deep do you go in those questions that you ask? So if you give me a category of responses and I don't like the responses that you give me, then I might suggest other, or it does not apply, or I might say not affiliated at all, because none of the responses that you gave me actually target where I am as an individual. And then you can draw certain conclusions from that. So one of Pew's studies that you didn't refer to is one where they said 44% of Americans are falling away from the faith. But when you read the study, what they actually found was that 44% of Americans are no longer affiliated with the church of their, or the denomination that their parents were raised in.
Oh.
So they may have been raised Presbyterian and now they attend a non-denominational church. So they are not affiliated with the religion of their parents. Does that mean that they left the faith? That's why these questions are really not as simple as one might think. So the fact that I now attend a non-denominational church does not at all mean that I'm unaffiliated. It means I'm not affiliated in the way that maybe I used to be affiliated or my parents were affiliated. It may mean that religion is even more important to me than it used to be. So that's why these questions sometimes get reduced to one item. And in fact, we need three or four items to help us understand where people really are. And I think the media is quick to pounce on any kind of research that seems to suggest that people are no longer religious or that they're unaffiliated, when in fact it's much more complicated than that, especially in a COVID era where maybe people are not able to attend as often as they would like, but they maybe view religion on the internet much more than they used to, and they may in fact attend a number of different congregations online.
Wow. Okay, well, let's put it this way. Is Christianity dying in America? Is Christianity thriving in America? That's two questions. Is Christianity dying or thriving?
Great question. Neither. I would say it's vibrant. I would say religion in America has been vibrant for decades, but it comes in new and different shapes and sizes. Much more people are much more likely to have their religious needs met in different ways than they have in the past. And so I know people that attend three or four different religious services online. And when I say different, I mean different cities. That's the wonderful thing about COVID in some weird way. You may attend church with quotes around it in three different cities because you now know that that is available to you since so many congregations have gone online. But you don't physically attend any of them. I'm not saying that that's a bad thing or a good thing, but it's a different thing. And I think it represents the world that we're now living in 2022, when people are having to look at different options to have their spiritual needs met. And so I would say that, and if you talk to people like at Facebook, they will say that religion is one of the main drivers of traffic that they see on Facebook.
Really?
One of my postdocs works at Facebook, and they contacted me about this. They're phenomenal about the spike. They're fascinated with the spike in religious activity on Facebook in this period of COVID that we're dealing with. So I think that what happens is people mischaracterize what's really going on out there. And as I have shared with you, I know it on at least one or two occasions, the number of people that claim to be atheist in America
4%.
Has remained stable for seven decades.
Wow.
So if religion were dying in America, you would think that atheism would have increased dramatically, but it hasn't. It stayed the same at 4% or thereabouts 4%. So I think that people are still religious, and I think that if you drive by churches, you won't see parking lots that are vacant. You'll still see churches with a lot of activity going in and out of them. Some churches are dying, for sure. Other churches are growing dramatically. And that's always been the case. So I would say that religion in America is alive and well, that it's not going anywhere, but that it continues to get a new look with each and every passing month.
Has religion provided, and specifically Christianity, let's say study the Bible, provided relief for people and help for them as they struggle with COVID-19? And part of what makes me think of this is the other day I asked you if you have any leads for me to look at, any studies or whatever, and you said, yeah, I just go to the Human Flourishing Project at Harvard's website. So I just do a Google search on that, and they had a link to it in an article on from Christianity Today on faith and COVID, or that's the overall issue.
Yep.
And there was a study done, and you were quoted in it, and it showed how prisoners who read the Bible, studied the Bible, received a lot of help psychologically and emotionally, as opposed to those who didn't. You know, same circumstances, just one with the Bible, one without. Tell us about this.
Well, it's the idea that does reading the Bible impact your life? If people are more engaged with the Bible, does that make a difference? And for some of your listeners, they will think, of course it might make a difference. And we have found that to be the case among prisoners. What we do really need are studies that do look at pre and post COVID, no one could have anticipated what we would be experiencing when COVID hit. We all thought it would last for a short period of time, I think. Right. And of course it continues to be with us even to the present. And so it's an excellent question that I can't give a good answer to because we have precious few studies on COVID and religion. And you mentioned one, but we did do a study looking at people who go to church and how often they go to church during the recession of 2008. And what we found was that as the economy tanked, a number of people reported that they became more depressed. And this was statistically significant in a national study that we published last year. But people who are regular attenders and affiliated with houses of worship, their emotional state remained flat throughout the recession.
Wow.
And so we didn't look at Bible study in that, but we did look at the amount of their participation. And so, again, if one was regularly participating in houses of worship, you might think that that had also something to do with how often they were exposed to, let's say, reading scripture. But we certainly know it has a lot to do with how much there are around like-minded people and the networks of support that are found within houses of worship. So for us, the findings made logical sense, but I think to a cynic, they might be bewildered that people going to church were not affected by an economic downturn and likewise not affected by an economic upturn. In other words, their relationship with God is the most important thing in their life, not their current financial situation. And I think that that really is a very important finding, and we published that in the Journal for the Scientific Study of Religion.
And let me go ahead and just mention this study, though, that we brought up a few moments ago, because it mentions you, it quotes you. It was in Christianity Today. I could even put a link to it in the posting for this discussion that you and I are having. But you said, quote, "We saw a reduction in PTSD symptoms, an increase in emotional well-being, and an improvement in attitudes toward God and the Bible." And that would be for those who spent diligent time in the Bible. This was in a prison where some of the prisoners were studying the Bible and then others weren't.
Others were not.
And the American...
This is a fascinating study, Jerry, because what we were studying is a program that is sponsored by the American Bible Society.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a program designed to help people struggling with trauma in their life. And so you can imagine if you're incarcerated, you likely have been the victim of trauma yourself, or you certainly have observed trauma. And what we found is that as many as 3/4 of the prisoners in our study actually had symptoms of PTSD. But after the intervention of this faith-based program, the downturn was remarkable because we studied them before they went into the program and then after they had completed the program, and then we studied them again later in time. And their PTSD symptoms, you know, dramatically downturned and stayed down for a significant amount of time. As a result of studying the Bible and reading the Bible, so this is a very simple intervention. This is not... And it was led by volunteers. It didn't cost taxpayers one penny. And so you can imagine that in a day and age when most budgets are shrinking, we really do need programs that can be helpful. And guess what? The Bible is one of those programs.
Yeah. Oh, excellent. Well, Dr. Byron Johnson, we're out of time, but let me give the website. It is BaylorISR.org. Thank you so much for being with us. All the best.
My pleasure.